Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
So welcome back to Pax Europiana, the road to peace in Europe by more unity and also by enlargement. I will make that case already. Maybe you have seen already some of my or listened to some of my podcasts. Today I'm in the section about the EU days. We celebrate the 1st of January and the membership of Greece in the European Union. It's now exactly 40 years in the year 81, on the 1st of January, that Greece came to the European communities, as it was called at that time, to the predecessor of the European Union. And that's something fantastic. That's something to be celebrated by all Greeks, by all Europeans, by everybody in the free world. This is a major breakthrough and a major achievement. And unfortunately, there was not such a celebratory mood in some areas, and I cannot understand that. And I will explain why this is such an amazing celebration, because it's logical. Greece is today much richer than it ever was in the history. It's a really very developed country with great infrastructure, great people, great education systems, and also with, obviously, many of you might know it from visits in the summer. It's fantastic, actually, there, and I love it very much. Greece is actually one of my favorite countries. But Greece is one of the countries which has a geographic position of such a geostrategic significance that it is never able, with the limit of with a small population, a small tax base, and a rather fragile political system, it is never able to defend itself alone, nor to really administer itself without the resources of a big union. So only inside the European Union and NATO, Greece can be secure and Greece can be prosperous, because, of course, simply it's so complicated, that geography, with all these islands, with the mountains, with the Balkan region, with the Bosporus, the strategic Aegean, the closeness to the Suez Canal. It is really very important, yeah. And I'm not talking because every country is important, you know, in a way, everybody, yeah. But Greece is of a special strategic significance. That is also the reason why Greece, in that sense, exists as an independent country, because it was one of the few countries which were really receiving Western support in its struggle for independence in the 19th century, somehow early split off the Ottoman Empire, because the policy at that time was not to support such liberation movements. And in a way, Greece was the only one who really got significant help, especially from the British, but also from other European powers, against the will of many and the common policy, because it really mattered so much. Yeah? And it wouldn't have been independent without this support, because financially, there is simply not a lot of money in Greece. And it was not in the 1820s, and still today we have this situation, because simply naval warfare is very expensive, mountain warfare is very expensive, and so you have to fund this. Yeah, there is no kind of taxpayer base in Greece to fund any of these major infrastructure and defense necessities which Greece ultimately has. And so it can only work in a big imperial empire, as it was to some extent in the Ottoman Empire, and now it's part of, if you want, the American European Empire. No, that's not true. It's the union of values and it's the union of equality. And despite a lot of Greek conspiracy, actually, we have sent a lot of money there. We have supported you always, and we will in the future. And we really love you and support you. And that's the short version. We can close here. No, there's a lot to say about Greece. It's really a wonderful country, and I like it very much. It just has a really complicated history. And when you look now that Greece is about as rich as Slovak Republic, Czech Republic, Lithuania, and Greece is already 40 years in the European Union, you can say, and some might say that, I'm sure, that Greece is not so wonderfully successful. Okay, it's of course very bitter when you live in that generation, which is now at the prosperity level of 2003 again. And that's after close 20 years, you have not made a lot of progress. Yeah? But we have to also see that Greece made enormous progress in the 2000s and in the 2000s. It was unrealistic kind of bubble. I was actually already in this time as an advisor in the European Parliament warning everybody, if you get a Ferrari, and that's what the currency is, and the currency, the euro is like a Ferrari. It's a wonderful tool, yeah? But if you not handle it rightly, and if you then increase all your pension payments to completely unsustainable and irrealistic levels, and you build all the infrastructure at once, in the most complicated country of Europe in terms of infrastructure and mountains and everything, then it will not really pay off. And when you then do also some megalomaniac events like an Olympic game, and then and you pay for all this and so on, you know. That's, of course, in a way, it's their own, it's not so much arrogance in a way, it's a kind of intrinsic megalomania of the Greek elite, yeah, that they think they are at one level with America, and just by coincidence of the world, they are now running a very small country. But the normal thing should be a membership in the G7 and global consulting about everything with them. That's not exactly the position of Greece in the 21st century, and it never was. Maybe in some historic times, 2,500 years ago, but certainly not now. So Greece is really very well in the European Union, and we have also supported it significantly, and we have also ensured that it stays during this whole debt crisis in the euro and in the European Union. Obviously, there was ultimately never any doubt. There were some like extreme left-wing fantasy leaders in Greece who have really fought seriously about leaving the euro, which would have been a complete disaster for the Greek middle classes, the Greek poor people. Obviously, the rich would have got richer, yes, and some state employees maybe also would have had this kind of jingoistic feeling of having the drachma again, but it would have resulted in a complete breakdown of civil order, and luckily it was avoided, but I had never any doubt that it will, because it's really serious economic sense and political geostrategic necessity. Let me talk about some of the other aspects why I'm not so happy with Greece, and let me go step by step. Yeah, in the north, I was once in a meeting in Greece. The former prime minister, no, minister of defense, I think it was called Vavitsiotis. Yeah, I will talk about, you know, the Greek families as well and their kind of tendency to only have five families in power. But let me talk about this meeting. I remember it very well. In 1994, it was the first time I was in Greece. And then he said very clearly at this meeting of EDS, it was amazing, yeah? He said, oh, Greece is a wonderful country, just we have many problems with our neighbor because everybody is against us. Albania, Macedonia, he didn't use that name obviously, Fyrom, and then Bulgaria, Turkey, and so on and so on. And also America is not a friend and blah, blah. He was giving it the full to the double. And that's unfortunately, I think, still the mentality of a lot of people in Greece that nobody is their friend, yeah? This is not exactly the truth. What is needed is a new kind of reconciliation and peace agenda with the neighbors in the north in order to connect Greece better with the European, Central European economies. It's very important to have Albania in the euro, in the EU. It's already NATO ally. Also to build the highways to Albania as well, because you built all these east-west highways. But it's very important also to connect to Albania, make sure Albania is very fast in the European Union, in this mandate. This is really very important. The same has already partly happened with North Macedonia, with the Prespa peace. That was a major achievement, and that's really fantastic. But now also build the highways and make sure North Macedonia joins the European Union in 2023-4. It doesn't have to wait anymore. It's much better. Remember, Greece was also joining in 81, and this was just 6 years after the junta, the Greek general dictatorship, fell. So speed matters and speed pays off. Also for Kosovo, you have not recognized Kosovo. That's quite a tragedy, and that really is a strategic mistake. You claim now to be the best ally under the new Mitsotakis government of America, so please get Kosovo recognized. And also Montenegro, to be sure to have this country also in the EU very fast, and not make this traditional kind of religious orthodox union policy with Serbia. If you think that this is the way of foreign policy, then please then join the Serbian Union, but not the European Union, please, yeah? Or there's also an alternative in Russia. But really get in line with a common European policy. We just sent several billions again under the Sure Fund, and this is really important. Yes, Greece matters very much historically for many reasons, but also the Balkans is, of course, a big story in Greek politics, because Greece was always divided between the big powers in a way for influence, a lot of competition in Greece because of its strategic location, and also in the Second World War and all this terrible destruction which happened in Greece. And I'm terribly sorry for everything. It was really the battlefield again of the big powers, and especially the Nazi terror regime has brought so much horror over Greece. It's very terrible. And it was not over when the Nazis had to leave in 44, I think, in June. And then it was like this, that the horrors continued, because basically the country was in a total civil war for 4 years because of the different powers, also minor powers, Yugoslavia under Tito, trying to get control of northern Greece. And here I will do in a separate podcast a lot of talking about the history of the Balkan Wars. But basically this was Ottoman Turkey, and it was for everybody's taking in the view of Tito. And all these generations leader, they knew exactly how it was divided in 2000, in 1912, 1913, and how all these borders has permanently changed according to the military power. So in that generation of leaders, it was ultimately no problem. Where is my military? There is my border. That was the mentality of Tito, Stalin, and also the Western leaders ultimately. And so there was this kind of outreach, but Tito had no backing of Stalin, because Stalin had other arrangements without consulting Tito with Churchill directly, this famous percentage agreement. And so he didn't allow Tito to do that. Tito didn't care what Stalin wanted, so there came the split, and then also the loss of the communists in the Greek Civil War, because the Soviet Union didn't support them anymore. And also Tito was in a difficult situation, and the Americans basically took this very difficult position over from a basically bankrupt UK, because in many ways the UK obviously has won the Second World War, but like in the First World War, it was with a lot of debt to America. And the way this was organized after 47 in this UK-American loan, it led to a big devaluation and default of the UK, which lasted basically from 47 to 49, and also led to the independence of India, but less known maybe, to the handover of the Greek Civil War from the UK to the US. There's this famous telephone call of Minister Bevin calling Dean Acheson, the Secretary of State of America, and saying, please, we are bankrupt. Sorry, what we to do? And the Greek Civil War, you have owned. It's now yours. Thanks a lot. And so the Americans took over this side to defend free Greece, and they succeeded. And basically, Greece is since then always an American client state from this moment, 47. Because then it was, of course, the victory in the Cold War. Then was the NATO accession, joint NATO accession with Turkey. That was important to have certain equidistance. And also it was has to be understood under the Korean War, because that was the big battlefield in East Asia between the Soviet Union and America. And Turkey was also supporting Americans in South Korea. And also NATO was already formed in 49. very much as a response to the first Strait crisis of 46. And then what to do with both countries? Obviously, there was only one military alliance in Europe, led by America. This is NATO. And so they both applied, and the Americans made sure that both of them joined immediately. The other allies were certainly less consulted at that moment because they were also less military relevant in 52 and to some extent are still today. So in a short version, that was the situation, and we always have to carefully balance the situation. The Americans tried to balance always between these two countries, Greece and Turkey, which ultimately are hostile states. If they could, they would attack each other, and they have in the 100 years before they joined NATO. From maybe 130 years, and they have been basically in permanent warfare, in with some interruptions maybe, but more or less it's like this, And they need to be held at equal distance. It's always a big problem when America then for some reason shifts a little bit the closeness, the coziness level from one side to the other, is currently too much on the Greek side because of Erdogan's adventures. And then it leads to a lot of instability in the East Med, and that's only benefiting Russia. So we need to come to equidistance between Greece and Turkey again, because if that's not working, then it's of course a big crisis. And this has also, we have seen it many, many times in the last 70 years of Greece and Turkey celebration of membership of NATO. Actually, it should be in 2022. I will watch very closely if both states will celebrate this. And it should be a EU-wide and NATO-wide celebration, the membership of Greece and Turkey in NATO, because it's really quite a fantastic achievement to keep peace in the East Mediterranean. And it will be kept. It will be kept also long-term. So that's important aspects of the Cold War history. Of course, it led to one of the worst crises in the history of the East Med was the Cypriot crisis. We have to mention it as well. It was exactly the situation where Greek coup in 67 and the military junta, which was basically done maybe with American connivance, and silent consent, not clear who actually has consented. There's always a question in this Cold War proxy situation, who is really making the decision, if it's the Greek military circles who wanted the coup and avoid a military, a left-wing government, or it was the Americans, who knows really. But the reality at this high level of escalation of the Cold War, Vietnam burning, there was no patience for a left-wing government in Greece, and so it didn't happen. Then the military coup came, and it also then, obviously, in a this kind of Cold War compromise situation, which America has found itself several, it's always a very big problem, because who is really setting the dynamic of this relation? Obviously, the population in Greece was very unhappy. Obviously, also the other allies were not so happy, because they were also not consulted. And obviously, it was a complete mess with terror and with a lot of human rights violations. And of course, this has eroded also the legitimacy of the whole situation. And it has then escalated in student rebellion, maybe also supported by some elements of Russia. But there were certain, or Soviet Union were certainly helpful in that one, or at least passively supportive of it. And then you had this more fragile government, the second part of the junta, and then they wanted to have this unification with Cyprus, made a military coup. The Turks obviously didn't want that, made the invasion, and so it ended up in a completely mess. And since today, Cyprus is divided, and the relation Cyprus and Turkey and the EU still today in 2021 are so toxic and so complicated. And it's really a complete mess. But how to settle it? I will talk a lot about the Cypriot issues as well. It's very dear to my heart. And I will, but it's very simple. It's NATO membership of Cyprus, and it's also the federal, free federal state. Basically, that's very simple. It's that there is one state which is already a member of the Union. The northern part joins this federation of a united, free federal Cyprus. and they join NATO. And so the security of that island is guaranteed, human rights is guaranteed, everybody will live happily, nobody will be forced to return to anywhere, but everybody can live freely in this beautiful island, and it will be united, it will be free, it will be federal, it will be NATO member. And so it will be. Or we wait with this for some time, but I don't see any major reasons to wait for it. Good, I hope that this will happen by 2024. So let me also say that, you know, there is a lot of people are critical to the bailout situation in the debts in Greece in the run-up of the 2011 to 15 Greek debt crisis and how this was managed and ultimately. But most important is that Greece is in the euro. Most important is that Greece is now growing again and will be growing in the future. And the simple solution for this massive state debt, which is obviously unsustainable, is quite simple, that the Greek privatization fund, which was then, this was this compromise with Schäuble, maybe you remember, where then this had to stay in Athens and it is gradually sold off. That's, of course, not the best model. The best model is and that all the Greek privatization fund is transferred to the European Investment Bank. The euro, it's fairly evaluated and generously evaluated, and the Greek, the EIB, basically as the new owner, basically buys all the assets in this fund, and then Europeanizes this asset, but also reduces the debt level of Greece. I mean, that's a debt equity swap in a big sense, obviously, but that's quite clear. How much is it worth? That can be easily evaluated. I'm sure the number is already there. Let's say 80 billion. It's one number, and then to make sure that this is the price tag, and then Greece can continue as a normal EU member state without any kind of state assets, much better. Less corruption, less collusion, and better management, and the EIB can gradually sell this off or manage it as part of the European Railway Company or European Motorway Company or European Energy Company, and that's much better than doing the current kind of compromise with this high tax, debt level. Tax is a good idea. You have to understand Greece as well as a normal Balkan country. It was just by geostrategic reasons, because of this British-American arrangements after the Second World War and the victory in the Civil War, it was kept in the West, in the free world. And that's also the reason why Greece is so successful. Compared also to Bulgaria or to Albania, but it's more or less a similar country. So it needs, in these countries in Southeastern Europe, the consensus of the governed with the government is very minimal. For historic reasons, they don't believe very much. Like in Sweden, for example, everybody feels part of the society. Everybody feels part of the government, yeah, has an interest in high taxation because there is a high consensus that this money is spent well. In Southeastern Europe, there is no consensus or a very minimal consensus that the people in, for example, in Kosovo and in Bosnia and in such countries, they are beautiful. I love them. But there is a joke that they call the government the occupiers. It's not a nice joke, but, you know, the mentality is that they don't trust. There is lack of trust between people. That's why they are also poorer. There is lack of trust in institutions. And there is less of trust that the taxation level will be used wisely. So what Greece needs is a 10% taxation level, the same like Bulgaria and North Macedonia, and also which Albania had before the socialists changed it. So it's very clear. Greece needs a 10% corporation tax, a 10% income tax. Greece needs a reasonable property tax, you know, with a small purchase tax, just 3% of purchase, but with a yearly, and that's, I think, was already done, with a reasonable yearly kind of property tax, because Greece is also a country where a lot of people have wealth expressed in property, but they don't have a lot of income. So property must be taxed, income must be relieved, and obviously EU VAT, anyhow Greece is in the EU, so that's not an issue. That is will be more or less harmonized, I hope in the coming years. And so that's the idea to really counter capital flight and kickstart investments again in Greece, because it's a wonderful country with decent property tax EU style and with decent 10% Bulgarian and Macedonian style taxation. and with a European cadastre, there will be a major investment drive. Not hopefully only from Russia, it's also a big problem, money laundering in the property sector from Russia. You have to see the Navalny video where he shows the Chaika. Please check out the Chaika video of Navalny, where the Russian state prosecutor's family, together with mafia interests from southern Russia, invest in a Thessaloniki luxury hotel. Not this kind of investment, please, Greece, but a good one. And also not the Russian state companies buying the Piraeus harbor, but better send it to the European Investment Bank for debt relief. That's the much better way. And that's what I'm calling for. There's also an important topic about gas in the East Med and the so-called East Gas Mediterranean Forum. I call the Greek government and everybody in the Mediterranean to work together with Turkey and lift these treasures together with the European Union Investment Bank, EIB, and have a kind of consensual approach with Turkey on that one. Turkey obviously should put all its vessels away, and they can be objectively established where which borders are, and the revenues can only be shared once the revenue is there. So that means also major investments, which these governments anyhow cannot do. So then it's much better to have it done by the European level and Europeanize these treasures, also with a revenue-sharing system with Egypt, Israel, with all the countries in Cyprus. Everybody should get successful with these treasures, but on an organized European manner and not with warships from France fighting with warships on Turkey. I mean, this is absolutely nonsense. And now with America back, I hope there will be a reasonable settlement of a kind of cooperation style between all the riverine states of the East Med to be in one EU gas agency for the exploration, funded together by the European Union, with the revenues, once they are there and established, to be divided to all countries. It would be very good also for these countries to pay back the massive redistribution which we have seen. So I wish you all to be very rich, but then also then contribute to the European budget in the future and not also consume. Anyhow, I know that takes many decades and I'm realistic on that one, but in the medium term it would be at least nice to behave without any conflicts when we already funding every state in that region is already subsidized by the European Union massively, just to have peace and prosperity in the long term. And please avoid any provocative steps. And please don't buy any kind of French airplanes, which you the Russian kind of S-400, because Mitsotakis buys French airplanes, Rafale. Erdogan buys S-400 to shoot them down, all of them funded by the European Union taxpayers. I mean, that's quite bizarre. Good. That's so far for the East Med, I guess, yeah. And then also, I have said already the infrastructure to Albania, Macedonia. Yeah, I think I have said that already. So that's about we can really celebrate. But what Greece absolutely needs, it's EU membership. Sorry. It's EU membership of Albania, Macedonia and Montenegro to connect directly infrastructure-wise to Central Europe, because obviously that's a major issue. I also tend to call for this tunnel, a railway tunnel between southern Italy and southern Albania. Similar like we now have a gas pipeline, the Trans-Adriatic pipeline, we need also the Trans-Adriatic railway tunnel. And please, EIB, I know it's expensive, but I know it's necessary. It will take maybe 20 years. Let's get started now, because then in 2040s it will be ready and it is absolutely needed to connect Greece better with Italy and also with Central Europe. One last thing which I would like to say is we need also stronger cartel and monopoly and competition legislation. And Greece is a really good example, because how it happens in Europe, we have all these smaller economies, typical between 500,000 people, let's say in Malta, and 10 million in Greece. And this is this typical kind of collusive network where easy families, which are already entrenched rich from the property sector or from the industrial holding, which they could somehow, because they had the market access to the United States, because they were part of the free world, they could somehow develop. And then, obviously, this leads to massive political power. and then they monopolize also the political system because of the wealth. It's not, I want to talk about, but it's true to some extent in many of the newer countries, but Greece is the best example for what I want to say. Yeah? You know, a small economy, then you have about, let's say, 10 political families and 10 business families, and they control half of the economy and they control most of the politics. It's not a political, it's not a coincidence when you see, for example, the most famous Greek families. Yeah, it's, of course, the family Karamanlis. Yeah? It's, of course, the family Mitsotakis. Yeah? It's, of course, the family Papandreou. I mean, these are household names in the whole world, or at least in the Western world. Yeah, everybody knows Papandreou. There's three generations of Papandreous, three generations of Mitsotakis. They are then related. The Mitsotakis are related. That's one family. So it's a bit confusing. You have to be a little bit initiated to understand that the Bakoyannis, the Mitsotakis, they are all coming from the Venizelos family. And that's probably the most famous name in Greek history of the 20th century, the prime minister during the First World War and the Greek War, and then in the 20s and 30s. And, you know, you have then you have the Vavitsiotis and the Rallis, yeah. To my best knowledge, there are some other families, but this is basically the five senior nobility family of the Greek system. It's called Mitsotakis, Papandreou, Karamanlis, and Rallis, Venizelos. Yes, that's it, basically. And they're all possible also interrelated somehow. You know, that's really wrong. And then you have this 10 big family companies. Onassis is the most famous name globally from this Kennedy connection. But there is also then this Kokkalis and Thalis. You know, it doesn't matter so much. Ultimately, what I want to say is that's a really big public policy issue in the European Union, because we have these very segmented markets, politically hard to change. Economically, yes, we can change it by a European competition regulation, which is fully enforceable everywhere, not just cross-border, but inside the countries. Open the countries, open them to European competition, to global competition, bring fresh air into this kind of vested interest, privatize the state monopolies, make sure there is more competition in the petrol sector, in the transport sector, make sure that all these offshore vehicles, which own all this, impossible anyhow in Cyprus or Malta or wherever in Panama, all these major logistic companies, the tanking, the shipping companies, that they register back in Greece, yeah, that they pay tax in Greece, yeah, that they are Greek assets, yeah, that you need to return this capital flight, which is happening since a century in Greece, yeah, all the time towards America, towards Panama, towards Cyprus, towards Switzerland, towards Austria and Germany now. It must be reversed by 10% taxation, by a confident legal system protecting investment, and that will return not only the international capital from the middle classes, which has gone now in the crisis, but also these big major Greek assets, which are in these trusts and in some offshore companies, and also to open the political system to more competition, and also open the economic system to more competition. And that's actually true in Malta, in Slovakia, in Bulgaria, in Cyprus, that this kind of smaller, and Austria as well. I can also name the 10 biggest families in Austria, but we have a bit more because we have more competition from Germany. We are more central. We have it's more internationalized in Austria already than in Greece. Yeah? And so we have more competition. And we don't have this kind of entrenched political families in Austria, to my best knowledge. There might be some families, yeah, we have them as well, but it's not the Karamanlis, Bakoyannis, Mitsotakis and Papandreou style, where you inherit political power by your family name and everybody simply. It's more like in the UK in the 19th century, where the borough is basically inherited from the duke to the son. And when you are 19, you get the MP because your father still is alive, and then when you stay a parliamentarian to have a title, and then you later, when you're the firstborn, you get the duke. Yeah? I mean, this is not good. Yeah, that's really problematic, I think so. And I think the Greek society needs to change that. And it's one of the reasons for this megalomania, because this elite is so rich, they think that they are so good, they think they deserve it. Then the euro comes, a really fantastic tool, and they drive up to unprecedented prosperity and debt levels in 2008. Then Karamanlis, in his unbelievable arrogance, is in the Bucharest summit in April. Don't forget that aspect. Yeah? And he opposes George Bush for the North Macedonian, for Macedonian NATO membership. Yeah? And then he says no, no, no to Bush after he was very friendly asked five times. Yeah, and he opposes America, the country which the whole last 50 years of, at that time, 60 years of Greek independence and security has been relying on. And then he says that, and then anyhow, everything breaks down. And now Greek people are again at the prosperity level of 2003. Anyhow, you know, it's not too bad because it's also the prosperity level of Slovenia, of Lithuania, of no, Poland is still poorer at 15,000. Slovakia is about the same level now like Greece. And so it's for a transition country, it's normal. But for a country which is 40 years already in the European Union and has benefited from all these opportunities, it's really a political failure. But it's not a European political failure. We gave you all the tools. We gave you all the money. We gave you all the openness, security and rights. Yeah? It's an internal political failure of Greece. Yeah? It's your own political system of power distribution, of institutional weakness and of megalomania, which has led to this crisis and escalated in 2008-9. Remember Bucharest, remember the financial crisis, remember also then this other kind of the left-wing Greece, then rejecting everything and trying to destroy the whole house, burn the house with leaving the euro in a total reckless, irresponsible case. And then we have all the situation. But okay, you know, we have this partnership, this marriage, this love together. It will be fine. It is already much better now. But be a little bit contrition and self-reflective. Yeah, it's not the world looking to Greece. Yeah, it's Greece has to look to the world and to Europe to see what to do, to reform like Bulgaria, to copy the Macedonian cadastre, to really open your economy, to be more competitive like Germany is, yeah, and to have a low-tax system, and to work with America, but on realistic things, and not then to have Chinese investments and Russian money laundering as the main avenues for prosperity, but really release the potential of your economy. It's such a fantastic country. Everybody wants to be there, but your institutional system has to be really reaching Europe and European level, the same like all the Southeastern European countries have reached in many institutional ways already under the pressure and the reform efforts of the last 20 years. And then Greece, really, it's time to catch up, to fully join Europe also mentality-wise and join the West fully, not institutionally only, but also mentality-wise. Be more open, be more transparent, do the things the European way, and be as successful as Lithuania and as Estonia. You will see that will be they will be much richer than you very soon if you don't change your own mentality and internal power distribution system in Greece. Anyhow, my emotional plea, now I got a bit too long. I want to thank you very much, and I love Greece. Thanks a lot for everything. And please, so let's celebrate the 1st of January every day. Think about Greece and this wonderful country. But think in Greece as well how you can be reaching the next level of transparency, openness, and European governance. Thanks a lot.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.